Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject today, well, we talked a lot about diet on this program, and we talked a lot about exercise, but we really haven't talked about the relationship between diet and exercise performance, also the performance mindset. We'll also talk a little bit about the evolutionary perspective on nutrition and its implication for human health. With us today is Brian Keene, who is author of two bestsellers. He's from the UK or Ireland originally. The books are The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset. Brian is host of the Brian Keene Podcast, which is the number one health and fitness podcast in the UK. So kudos to you, Brian. And Brian really walks the walk because not only is he a personal trainer and an online coach, but he also is an extraordinary performance athlete. He, after retiring from the world of professional fitness modeling in 2015, he's not hard on the eyes, by the way, he now does ultra endurance events all around the world. And we're talking ultra endurance. We're not talking marathons, a mere marathon. In 2018, Brian ran the famous Marathon des Sables, which entails six self-sufficient back-to-back marathons, but not just ordinary marathons through the, you know, balmy British countryside, but through the Sahara Desert in Morocco. In February 2019, he ran 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle in the northernmost tip of Sweden. So he knows a thing or two about the relationship between diet and exercise, because at those levels of performance, nutrition is a key component. So it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Brian. I think our listeners will learn a lot from you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Ron. I'm really excited to chat.
Indeed. So, you know, tell us a little bit about your personal journey, because you started out as a teacher, and now you've become an online coach and a fitness influencer and personal trainer. Explain how that happened.
Yeah, to cut a long story short, I worked as an elementary school teacher for 4 years. And I did an undergraduate in business, and then I did a postgraduate to become a teacher. And because of being a male, I was in the UK in London at the time. I walked into my first teaching job. I had a hand pick of selection of what job I wanted to take. And I was about 30 minutes into my first day of a third grade class. And I thought to myself, oh, I don't want to be a teacher. This isn't the career path for me. This isn't what I want to do. And the analogy I've used in books and on podcasts was, it felt like I had spent years climbing a ladder only to realize it was up against the wrong wall. And I came home that Christmas. I was 23 years of age. I was really unhappy with my job. I hated my first teaching job. It felt so out of alignment with what I was supposed to be doing. And I came home that Christmas, and I remember my mother had a conversation with me, Ronald. I was having a proper pity party for myself. I felt like, oh, I've spent all these years, all this time, all this energy, all this money becoming a teacher because it was what I was told I should do. I came from a family of teachers. And my mother was sitting across from me in our home where I grew up, across the other side of the kitchen, and said, okay, if you don't like where you are, you're not a tree you can move, but what would you do for free? And I sat there and thought, well, I never even considered that as an option. And that my brain started to go and all these thoughts came into my head. And I said, well, I would work in the gym for free. I love physical activity. I grew up playing sport. Gaelic football was my sport, like the Irish national sport. It's like a combination between American football, rugby, soccer, and basketball. So it's a very athletic sport. So
I had been in a contact sport and a really tough, rough, tough sport.
Yes. Yes. It's full contact, no shoulder pads. So you need to be very physically strong to play that. So I've been lifting weights since I was 13. I've been in a gym since I was 16. So at that point, I had been lifting for 7-8 years. The gym was a place I went to release a lot of stress, a lot of excessive energy. I had really bad ADHD, which became quite managed when I was 16 because I started to get rid of some of that excess energy and it started to maintain with lifestyle changes. Again, a whole different rabbit hole of a conversation. But when she asked, what would I do for free? I thought, well, I would work in a gym for free. I had the first time in my mind, first time ever in my life, I thought if I was sweeping the floors in a gym, I'd be happy. And I don't like what I'm doing now. So I followed that train of thought. I ended up going back to London where I studied to become a fitness instructor that January before I went back to school. And instantly I was hooked. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I went and got my personal training certificate, my sports nutrition. I ended up working through as a S&C coach, all while I was working as a teacher. So in the evenings, I was doing my qualifications, my studies. And then for the space of 2 years after I got all my certs and qualifications, I worked as a teacher during the day. And then I worked as a personal trainer in a gym at nighttime and at weekends and at holidays. And over the space of 2 years, I started to make more money as a personal trainer than I was as a teacher. And I said, okay, I need to give this a go full time and see, is this potentially going to be a career option for me?
So you cut yourself loose from the education field. Yeah.
I did. And it's funny because I wasn't really confident, because when you're building confidence, it comes from competence. And I didn't have a lot of competence at the beginning because I wasn't great at my craft. Everyone is a disaster at the beginning. The old adage that once every master was once a disaster is so true, because I was a terrible personal trainer. Apart from I loved physical fitness and I was willing to research the needs of what my clients were struggling with. And I got better over the space of a 2 year period. And then I moved back to Ireland, in the west of Ireland, close to where I grew up, in 2014. I had to move back in at my mum and dad because I had no money apart from my savings as a teacher and as a personal trainer. And I needed to give myself a runway of time that I need to be able to live on this if I'm going to make a full-time go at it. And over the space of that 3 months, it just exploded in a positive way. I had a waiting list of clients. I had to bring other personal trainers on underneath me to clear that waiting list. And then in 2015, my daughter was born. And I decided, okay, it's time to shift this online and move it online. And over the past, 9 years at this stage, we've been online serving people with programs, online coaching, multiple best-selling books, the podcast, working with different brands, working with different companies, and being able to grow it and expand it to the place where it is today, where we've got one of the top health podcasts in the world in terms of download numbers. And then we've got our social media, we've got our email list, we've got the books that help and serve people in a meaningful way to get into better shape through their physical activity, their nutrition, and most importantly, their mindset, so how they're approaching it.
By the way, is your outreach international, or is it just restricted to UK? Do you have a constituency of people? You're speaking to mostly people in the United States, although we have listeners all around the world, but is your online training accessible to people in the United States? Has you made that step?
Yeah. We've people all over the world. So our TikTok, we've over 250,000 on TikTok, and it's 80% US based. So we've got quite a decent following through the US, but it spreads. It's mostly nearly all English speaking. So Australia, US, Canada, North America, and then UK and Ireland.
Okay. So, a lot of people take sort of a car analogy when it comes to sports nutrition, calories in, calories out. And so that has led to the carb loading hypothesis, You have engaged in amazing feats of endurance. And so, you know, a lot of people would say, well, the goal is to most expediently get the most amount of carbohydrates into your system so that you can burn them for long-term athletic performance. But I think there's been some new think on that, and you've investigated it. So what's your take on nutrition for endurance athletes?
Oh, it's a beautiful question. I love this because I grew up playing sport, and Gaelic football, our national sport, is like glycolic-based sport. So carbohydrates are your friend. Mm-hmm. You need that quick energy. You need to be able to sprint. You need your body accessible because it's a short period of time. The games are 60, 70 minutes maximum. Endurance is completely different. And something I had to explore when I got into the world of endurance first, and Marathon des Sables was my first kind of entry point into extreme endurance.
So that's six consecutive marathons in a very challenging climate, you know, hot desert environment, right?
Yeah. And it's self-sufficient. So you carry all your food on your back for the 6 days.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, my goodness.
So because of my build, for those who can't physically see me or have no idea what I look like, I'm 5'8". I'm 85 kilograms. I'm not sure what that is in pounds. But I'm built like a little hobbit. I'm short, I'm stocky, I'm muscular. I'm not built like an endurance athlete.
That's so when I 170 US pounds, I would say.
I'm a pretty big guy. I'm quite short, right. I'm stocky, I'm thick. Mm-hmm. And when I was researching for Marathon des Sables, if you think about it logically, somebody my size whose glycogen stores are going to be excessive because I've got quite a high metabolic rate because of the amount of lean muscle tissue I have. So my metabolism is very high. There is no way I'd be able to carry 6 days worth of food in carbohydrate form, even from a calorie standpoint, because of your 1 gram of carbohydrate is 4 kilocalories. Just you would have to have so much of that. So I started to look down the metabolic flexibility route. So becoming a more fat adapted athlete. So when I'm preparing for ultra endurance events, Marathon des Sables, running through the Arctic, I ran a 100-mile ultra marathon in Nevada in 2020. I came in the top 10 in that race. I switched to fat adaption. So either mild ketogenic style and coming in and out of ketosis, or more dietary fat that I'm consuming so that I'm not constantly having to top up the source. So one of the negative impacts of being a glycolic-based athlete, particularly in endurance, where you're taking on carbohydrates.
So let's explain that term. A glycolic or glycolytic-based athlete, in other words, someone who depends on a constant stream of glucose or glycogen stored in the liver or muscle, right? So that, and though you say that's good for, you know, probably good for a lot of people, you know, who do engage in short bursts of exercise. You know, maybe they're going to go on the elliptical for 20 minutes in the gym. You know, that's, they're tapping those reserves, but maybe not so good for additional feats of athleticism.
For long endurance events, and I would say anything from marathon distance onwards, whether that's running, cycling, swimming, you need to have knowledge, whether you apply it or not is up to you, but understand that there's a different fuel source you can take from. The analogy I've used is, it's like gasoline for a car versus electric for a car, that you have different energy sources that will move the car, to use the analogy
earlier. We're hybrid vehicles. We can we can switch from one fuel source to another, right?
But we have to train ourselves to do that.
Okay.
Because it takes a bit of time. Something that I struggled with in the beginning was because I played, and most people in the Western world, because their carbohydrate intake is quite high, they're going to naturally use carbohydrate for fuel. And what happened to me, which has happened to a lot of marathon runners, is they get the term called hitting the wall.
Bonking. Yeah.
Bonking. And that's just where it's a horrible feeling.
I've had that happen.
Oh, it's just, you're just losing the will to live 30 kilometers into a 42 kilometer marathon, or 15 miles into a 26 mile marathon. It's just horrible. That doesn't happen when you're a fat adapted athlete. You don't get that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, the downside is you're not going to be as fast. you're not going to be as energized. So there is a trade-off. Mm-hmm. And that's where the analogy of the gasoline and the electric kind of come in together. The analogy I use here, which is more applicable for Ireland and the UK, is petrol and diesel, because petrol is very fast, diesel is a bit slower. Mm-hmm. That tends to work really well as an analogy here for people that can grasp that concept. That's the trade-off when you're more fat adapted. So if I'm training for a marathon, which I'll be doing marathons early next year, I'll be using carbohydrates to train for those, because it makes sense, because I'm going to be able to low glycogen stores. I can have my gels. I'll already be a little bit metabolically flexible because I do days where my carbohydrates are low, so I can keep my metabolic flexibility and use that fat for fuel, dietary fat, etc. So I'm able to basically use it as turbo mode the day of a race, where, you know, in the lead up 2-3 weeks before, I'll drop my carbohydrates down, get my body a little bit more fat adapted, and then I'll reintroduce them 24 to 48 hours before. Right. And then that gives me a competitive edge for a marathon. When you go longer, you don't have that luxury. Or if it's self-sufficient, like the Sahara, like the Arctic, where you're carrying your food, you have to look at alternative sources. With the best example I'll give on this is I ran a 100-mile ultramarathon, the Jackpot 100 in Nevada in 2020, right before the lockdown. And I, without getting into the TMI, about mile 13 in, I got serious issues with my stomach. Combination of the heat, combination of just the sleep, the jet lag, all of that. So I was out of action for about 20 minutes. Won't get into the details of what was happening, but I was out of action for about 20 minutes. This happened to most runners. And I couldn't eat again from mile 13 until mile 40. Wow. So I had to go a very long period on just water. If I was a carbohydrate-based athlete, my race was over.
Yes.
There was no way you can continue because you don't have the fuel, you don't have the energy.
Right.
Because I was able to, and had been metabolically flexible and trained my body to not need constant topping up of nutrition and food intra-race, I was able to refuel again at mile 40 and finish out the 100 miles. So that's one of the advantages. Again, you're going to trade off a little bit of speed and performance, but you're upside is you don't have to constantly refuel. And if you have a sensitive stomach or any kind of gut permeability or gut issues, you might want to experiment with this option, because it just gives you more room for not having to worry about the nutrition obsessively the same way you would if you were topping it up every 40 minutes.
So do you mean to say that during a race you might consume your calories in a form of fat or ketones? There are actually athletic formulas that are ketone formulas that deliver it as readily available, beta hydroxybutyrate and things like that.
You can. I don't. I've experimented with it on training runs.
Okay.
But I don't on race days. I normally use a combination of either coconut oil, almond butter, or chia seed gels. Wow. So I use a more of a whole food nutrition approach.
Interesting. So, but I got to tell you, I had some personal experience with this. For many years I carbo loaded. So it was sort of a tradition that, when I was doing triathlons with a group of people, we would have like a pasta party the night before. And that was kind of like a 1990s thing. It was like a carbo load the night before, and then do your race. And then the new keto paradigm, entered the picture. And so before one race, I decided to have a halva bar. You know what halva is? Halva is like a sesame sweetened, confection, right? But it's very caloric and it's mostly fat. And that was a mistake, because that sat in my stomach like a lead weight. Because obviously, as you know, fat delays intestinal transit. So it kind of sits there, and especially when your body is stressed with exercise, it's just going to sit there. So how do you reconcile the gastric slowdown effects of fat with the absorption advantages of carbohydrates, which can be very quickly delivered, and easily assimilated and go directly into your muscles?
You have to train your gut. It's the exact same as if you're learning a new language. You do it bit by bit and you gradually improve.
Well, that I didn't do. I kind of took my gut by storm. It was like a new experiment that I tried on triathlon morning.
Yeah. And the advice I give across the board, and there's not too much advice that's applicable to every athlete out there, but one that is never try a thing on race day. always experimenting with it first.
I learned the hard way. Yeah. So, okay. So, I guess now here's the other thing. I mean, I actually recalculated. You're built like a small, nimble, running back. I mean, you might make college football. I don't know if you'd make it into the NFL because you're relatively short, but you're very muscular. So you're US weight, like in the 180s, 180 something, that's 85 kilos. So you're a bit of a chunk. So when you're, in the training phase, you want to keep your weight down because the tendency is, you know, if you're just carbing all the time, you know, you can't, there's a saying, you can't run away from a bad diet. And I've trained athletes, you know, cyclists and so on, whose idea of training was to, you know, just eat a massive amount of food, you know, mostly carbohydrates. At the end of the race, they'd just be cramming in pastry and stuff like that. And I said, no, go more keto during your training phase. Hey, if for an event, you may want to take some of these gels. You may want to take, you know, a sugary, electrolyte beverage to sustain your performance, but train keto and use carbs for an event. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of saying it. That's what I was trying to explain earlier, that one of the performance enhancing benefits that I do with nutrition is that I'll do more keto, more fat-based nutrition in the lead up to a race, and then I'll reintroduce the carbs,
okay,
complex carbs the day before, and then maybe some simple sugars on the day of. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire then. It means that you've got multiple sources of energy that you can pull from, and you're going to get a performance increase from that. Now, the timing is important. If you're doing a marathon versus a 100-mile ultra marathon, it's completely different because your time, there's so many considerations to take in there. But general rule of thumb is that's a really good approach for an endurance athlete, from my experience and with clients that I've worked with.
So practically speaking, in our audience, you know, admittedly skews older demographically, you know, because I've been on the radio for nearly 40 years and I've inherited an audience that is kind of aging gracefully along with me. And so for many people, it's a matter of, you know, maybe doing, 10,000 steps or, you know, going on the elliptical or maybe doing a little bit of light resistance exercise. Key question, is it advisable to eat before you exercise or is it better to exercise fasting as I do? And should you take a recovery drink or a recovery meal after exercising? What works best? I know there's a lot there to unpack.
Context matters a great deal. So the starting point to the individual and the end goal are the two most important things. So if you are an individual that is doing a little bit of resistance training to improve strength, increase your metabolic rate so that your risk of injury goes down, you know, as you're getting older, etc., your approach to nutrition is going to be very different to somebody that is actually preparing for a half marathon or a full marathon. So the goal and the starting point matters massively. With the nutrition side, I normally advise people that fall more into the general population. So that is, you know, losing a little bit of weight, losing a little bit of body fat, building a little bit of muscle, wanting to get stronger, wanting to get fitter,
right,
wanting to increase performance for everyday life. That is, keep your protein high, making sure that you're hitting your daily protein requirements without overthinking it. I just tell people, look, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, have a decent protein source at those meals. Ideally, have a fiber source at those meals if you can, which is going to help you feel fuller for longer. And then you've got your complex carbohydrates and your dietary fat. This is where it kind of skews because, as you know, there's no essential carbohydrates. There's essential right. fatty acids that you have to get, and there's right. essential amino acids that you have to eat or get from supplement form. There's no essential carbohydrates. Right. They can taste really good. They're good for performance, whole host of benefits, but they're not essential. So you're looking to see what works for your individual preference. For me, I'm similar to you, Ronald. I train fasted, but because it suits my schedule. Like I run two businesses, I've got my daughter, my family, lots of other commitments with my training. I'm flying out to Africa on Monday. I'm climbing Kilimanjaro, the highest peak in Africa, from Tuesday. So I've got a lot of plates that I'm spinning at one time. So I train in the morning fasted because it just suits my schedule.
Right. It's one and done, and then the rest of the day is clear.
Exactly. But if performance was my primary goal, and I was just living to perform, I would probably eat before training. My workouts are always better when I have a bit of fuel in my system, okay, depending on what I'm doing.
But real workouts training are very prolonged. And I must say that, I'm good maybe for an hour and a half bicycle ride. But if I go for like a really long bicycle, like I'm going for, 50, 60 miles, I'm going to need to have some fuel. And I'll have a little bit before, and I'll carry a little bit along with me to sustain me. But there are advantages to exercising fasting, aren't there? Isn't this more, put you more in a fat burning mode?
100%. Well, if you're trying to speed up the process of becoming a more fat adapted athlete and becoming more metabolically flexible, and the term metabolically flexible just means you can use carbs and fat efficiently for fuel, training fast, it speeds that process up. You can do it with keto, and you can do it with dietary ketosis, which is where you're eating a high level of fat, low level of protein, very low level of carbohydrate, so that your body is going into ketosis through a dietary state. Or you can have fasting ketosis, where you're doing it fasted and you're hijacking and speeding up that process. The starting point matters. If you're an individual in, say, the Western, I used to live in Berkeley, California. So my housemates were all American at the time, and most of them had grown up on sugary breakfast cereals. So for someone that's used to having carbohydrates, especially sugars in the morning, your Lucky Charms, your Shreddies, etc., that process of training fasted is going to feel horrible.
Yeah.
Because there's you're not giving yourself any in between. Whereas if you have been eating scrambled egg every morning for the last 5 years, you're going to find going fasted a lot easier, because the fat content, the protein content, it's not as much of a shock to your system.
Right.
So it depends again on the starting point, coming back to what we said. So how you approach it will depend on what you've been doing up to this point.
That's a good insight, because you kind of have to train to it, because it's taken me a while to do time-restricted eating and time-restricted feeding, incorporating exercise as part of my morning routine before I eat anything. And for a lot of people, that's a bridge too far. Because they're not adapted to that. But you gradually, you can extend the period of time that you're not eating. You stop eating at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and you have your first meal at 11 after you've had a bout of exercise. What's your take on the other part of this, which is post-exercise? I mean, should you, as some people say, immediately, run to the blender and, make a whey protein drink with creatine to replenish your exhausted muscles, or is it the timing is not so critical to, take it easy on that?
I think, again, it's goal dependent. Timing is always important to a degree, and what you're looking to achieve is important. So if you are trying to become way more, and I'm going to talk two ends of an spectrum of opposite ends, and then I'll come back to the middle, which is probably more applicable to the majority. If you're trying to become more dietary, metabolically flexible and more fat adapted, you might extend that fasting period outside of training. Now, you will take a recovery hit, 100%. You're not going to feel as good the next day, but you will speed up the process of becoming more metabolically flexible.
Yep.
If you're trying to maximize recovery in an endurance-based workout, well, you want your amino acids after training, your protein. So whether that's from a whey protein drink, a vegan drink, an amino acid blend, you want to replenish that as soon as possible, especially if you're doing any form of strength or resistance training. You're tearing down those muscle fibers in the session, and your body needs those amino acids directly after.
And you're going towards repair and hypertrophy. So,
100%. And you're trying to increase protein synthesis as fast as possible directly after training, if that's your goal. If you have a goal that's more endurance-based and you're a carb-based athlete, you're carbohydrate intake becomes equally as important as your protein then, because you want to replenish your glycogen stores as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So you're going to take on maybe some simple sugars, maybe a complex carbohydrate meal within that 45 to an hour window after training, and that's going to set you up for the next day. I always tell athletes that, yes, it's important to get your pre-training window right, your post-training window right, but you're always thinking about the next workout. That's the mindset of an athlete. That, okay, what's the next workout? What's the next race? What's the next event? Where's the next thing I'm looking to train for? So your nutrition will reverse engineer that. So if I'm training, or someone is training on a Monday with a 50-mile bike ride, and you've got a 20-kilometer run the next day, or just an hour weight training session, you're going to focus your nutrition around that. So it's going to be more high protein, high carbohydrate, or potentially high protein, high fat if you're trying to make yourself more metabolically flexible. So I wish there was a one-size-fits-all answer, but it really depends on the goal of the individual and what they're looking to do, yeah.
And this is actually the challenge for you because you do personal training, you do online coaching. Is it one-on-one or do you conduct seminars, group sessions? How does that work?
We do. So I haven't done one-to-one in person since 2015 was the last time I've worked with somebody in person. So All my one-to-one is online and all my scale grouped is in a group, but it's all body composition based. So okay. I have two scale programs. One is for the GEA players that I mentioned, similar to what I worked as. That's a group program. And I've got what's called my BKF online program. It's a group body composition program. So think fat loss, weight loss, toning up, building muscle. And then my one-to-one is where I work with endurance athletes or anyone with a very specific type of goal, food issues or food behavioral issues, performance goals that are mixed with body composition goals. So I work with a lot of athletes who are like, look, I want to build muscle, but I want to run a marathon. Which you can do both of those things. It just means you have to have a program, a plan, a supplement guide, a recovery strategy that's all tailored towards that. It's very doable, but it's very individual. Right. So that's where the one-to-one online comes in.
And of course, it's not just about nutrition, obviously. It's about, you know, training regimen that sustains that, you know, just enough, not too much, proper recovery. It's a very nuanced thing to achieve optimal performance. Okay, we got lots more to talk about because we have a wonderful resource on today's podcast, Brian Keene. Brian is a host of the Brian Keene, K-E-A-N-E podcast, which is the number one health and fitness podcast in the UK. Also author of two great books, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset. Mindset, part of this, because to sustain an ultra-endurance event in the desert or in the Arctic, it does require a mindset of sorts, but very clearly. We'll talk a little bit about the importance of mindset for athletic performance when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.